I'm a very easygoing kind of person, but you one are. Thing I hate yeah, is true. Men who wear sandals in the summer. Oh. It offends my sensibilities, and I just, I get angry. I have to look away. I don't want to see men's feet unless they're a Roman gladiator or something like that. I think sandals have no place on a man's foot or a woman's foot.
I not only use sandals in the summer, which I like very much, but I use them as well.
You do look like the type who might wear sandals. Yes, and I've thought this.
And I use sandals with socks.
Sandals with socks.
And everybody tells me that the worst thing in the world.
I'm not sure if that's worse or better. Oh, hang on. We're recording UFE.
It's true.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Unforced Error, which is a middle-aged guy, a 40-something guy, talking about tennis and saying the things that the pundits on TV don't dare say. So I'm joined by my colleague David Radina, Sir David Radina, to give him his full name. And tonight, David, I think I'm right in saying we're going to be talking about the French Open of 2022, which has just been and gone. And then at the end of the programme, just a short preview of Wimbledon, which is coming up. The grass court season has started. But before we start, I lost 6-2, 6-love at tennis this week in my club's competition. When's the last time you were beaten so heavily? And how did you feel about it?
You know, I actually lost a match a few weeks ago against one of those clay court specialists that don't miss and the ball is always coming back. He's a good player and it was
crazy. That a friendly or was that a...
No, it was a league match. I couldn't hit the forehand. Mm-hmm. The backhand was the only thing that was working, but it was dodgy. Everything was wrong that day. And I felt compassionate to the people that lose. It's funny how if you win so much, you lose compassion. It's almost like life, isn't it? If your life is too good, you don't really feel the problems that other people have. But if you go through those problems too, you grow some sort of compassion or understanding about it that you didn't have from before.
So you like to lose occasionally just to remember the feeling and get the compassion.
I don't like to lose ever, but I think there's positives that come from it. And one, which is how do you deal with that emotion? It's good to be reminded.
Yes, it is. If you don't lose, how can you improve?
How can you know? Yes. Hey, it's good for the rivalry.
So in a way, it's what you choose it to be, isn't it? You could look at it negatively
True.
Or positively.
That makes sense. It yeah. always makes you feel something that is out of your control. But then how you respond to that emotion is where you have a choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the score in your match against Thorin?
It was like 6-4, 6-3 or something.
Well, that's pretty close. That's closer than the French Open final between Rafael Nadal and Casper Ruud. Is that how you pronounce it? Casper
Ruud.
I probably can't pronounce it correctly.
Yes, and let me give you some kudos for spotting him out before the tournament.
Thank you. I will always accept kudos whenever it comes my way. I didn't actually predict it on UFE. I predicted it in a private text conversation.
It's true, right after the UFE.
And to be fair, I did predict, I thought he could go all the way, by which I meant I thought he could go all the way to the final.
Exactly.
And I didn't say I thought, if he meets Nadal or Djokovic in the final, then he will be making the loser speech, which is what turned out to be the case. 6-3, 6-3, 6-love. First time he ever played Rafa Nadal.
True.
Well, do you think that was a factor in the result, the fact he'd never played him before?
I'll start by saying Ruud is a lovely guy.
Absolutely.
I really like him. And that's the kind of champion I want to see holding trophies more than all the other guys that are around. Ruud is
what makes
really...
him a, why is he a lovely guy? What do you think makes you call him a lovely guy?
Because of the way he presents himself and he acts around and he talks and he smiles and he there's something really nice about him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe when you meet him, he's actually not what you're looking at. But through the lenses of the TV and the interviews, he's really wonderful, and that's the kind of player I want to have around, to be honest. And he doesn't celebrate all the time like Alcaraz does, so that's pretty cool and stylish at the same time. But anyway, this to say that, but to answer your question, I think we have to definitely give a little bit of credit to the first time playing against Nadal. and as first Grand Slam finals. But having said that, I was disappointed with his attitude in the final. Six love at the end is giving up.
Yeah, and I think by his demeanor at the end, before the speeches, sitting in his chair, I think he was disappointed. Like, I didn't give a proper account of what a talented player I am. But then Nadal does not let you do that. I totally agree with your comments, David. I think Ruud seems a really nice person. We've got a friend, Marco, who at the start of the tournament, sent a WhatsApp picture of him posing with Casper Ruud at an airport. And he's just the kind of guy who would take time out if you saw him at the airport. He seems that kind of guy who would take a photo with you, have a selfie with you, rather than brush
Agreed.
You off. And I totally agree about he doesn't over-celebrate points like so many other players do. Yeah. You know, they win a point 15 love in the third game of the first set. And it's like they've won the Holy Grail kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, very nice and... modest kind of person, very talented, very neat. But I remember years ago, a player called David Nalbandian reached the Wimbledon final in this pretty much his first ever Wimbledon, where he faced Leighton Hewitt. And he'd never played on centre court before. And obviously the final was going to be on centre court. And the organisers made an exception for him. They allowed him to practice on centre court before the final because he'd never played on centre court before.
How nice is
this
that?
This was in the years when the semi-finals were played at the same time. So one semi-final would be on centre court and one would be on number one court. I think there should almost be the same thing if you've never played Rafa Nadal before. You should get an hour practice with him just to get used to those looping, great, stiff-armed forehands that he does. It's not fair, you know. You got to feel Tyson's punch before you go in the ring with him.
That's true, yeah. That's true, because when you get punched, then you know you can take it or you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I felt sorry for Ruud. Nadal, even on one foot, which effectively he was on, really. With
now we know
killers.
What's going on. Yeah. He explained in the post-match interview that he's actually played the French Open with injections on his foot and he had no feeling on the foot.
No, and he's not prepared to do that again.
Can you imagine playing without feeling your foot? A sport that requires footwork.
Well, yeah, I mean...
It's interesting, no? It's like you're stepping with your foot on the floor and you don't feel
it's
it.
It's so important, transferring your body weight
How did he do it? And Nadal said that he's not doing this for Wimbledon.
No, which to
Some
me
people
is
don't
a,
like
as a big
it.
Fan of Wimbledon and Roland Garros. I love Roland Garros.
Your two favourites.
Yeah, my two favourites. Mm-hmm. This is nitpicking, but I do find it slightly disappointing because I think Nadal is a very good grass court player. You don't win Wimbledon twice in the era of Federer.
Against a Federer that was coming back. Two sets to love down. How did he do that? Considered the best final of all time.
Because he was fearless, I suppose, and young. I know he's had a barren patch at Wimbledon, but he seems to have come out of that. He ran Djokovic very close not so long ago. I think it's a shame. He misses a lot of Wimbledons. And I know the clay court season is longer than the grass court season and it takes it out of you. But there seems to be more picking and choosing amongst all players in the ladies and the men's of what tournaments they play. How many people were missing the French Open this year? And I know there were some valid reasons.
Kyrgios,
Federer.
It's related with love with clay. He doesn't like it very much and he skipped the whole season of clay.
Yes, which is just... It's just unbelievable.
Why wouldn't you play?
It's like a fireman refusing to go to fires in people's houses or
in
something.
Specific houses.
It's such a big part. It's really a third of the tennis season, isn't it? You've got hard courts, grass.
And I'll tell you, I'm not a professional, but I've played in all surfaces. And I'll say, tennis is fun in all of them. Tennis is about running after a ball with a racket and hitting back to the other side. All the courts do that. I don't understand this.
We seem to be moving to an era when all the top players were good on all surfaces.
Yeah.
And now we've got it where there's a bit more specialisation. Medvedev just isn't very good on clay.
No.
He really isn't. He's got
finally
the flat
doing
strokes.
Well, but yes.
And Kyrgios chooses not to play on clay. Murray chooses to play on clay, but I won't turn up to the French Open. And I know you can say he's got a metal hip and stuff like that, but you never know. Tim Henman, he could have avoided clay, but he gave it a go and reached the semi-final quite late in his career. He could have taken that attitude, I'm getting old, I'm not going to play clay, and he would have missed out on a French Open semi-final.
Yeah.
And he could have won the tournament. The draw was
Almost
opening
there.
Up for him.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame.
Side note about Henman, relating to the Marco story about taking a picture with Casper Ruud. Once upon a time, in the O2 finals, we were there, me and a friend, and you know how I feel about Henman. And
I love lost.
He's becoming a better commentator. I have to hand that to him. But so he was in this hut somewhere for people to take pictures with him. And it was very sad what I saw. So my friend lined up to take a picture with Tin Henman. And it was just the most impersonal picture I have ever seen. It's like he did not give a damn about the person that was next to him.
And even
if you don't give a damn, show something, you know?
Give something of yourself.
Oh, exactly. He didn't.
Because
it was weird, man.
The friend of the person you're taking a photo with is going to be on a podcast talking about how Tim Henman was impersonal.
That's exactly it. And I felt sad for my friends. Like, why would you even put yourself in a position like that? Take a picture with a guy that doesn't even give a damn. Anyway, going back to the French Open men's. Yeah, what else stick in your head about this tournament with the men's?
Monfils was injured, so he was missing. Berrettini, who's back for the grass court season, he was injured. So, yeah, there are a lot of absences. Was it a great French Open?
Did you enjoy it?
Well, right back at you, did you?
I always love it.
Was it one of the better ones? Or?
It was very special until Medvedev and Alcaraz lost.
You were following those two,
I follow all of them. And I have to admit, I was on the Alcaraz excitement train, the roller coaster. And he definitely was the one that I was at least hoping to get a semifinal against Nadal or Djokovic. When he lost that match, I was a bit like, ah. But then I was excited about Zverev. For almost a decade now, all these newcomers, they've been hiding under the shadow of the top three, accepting defeat. They're saying this in their heads. I'm one of the best, but it's okay to lose against the top three. Then Alcaraz arrived, and Alcaraz stirred the pot there because he not only proved that I can beat these guys, he beat Nadal and Djokovic, not in a Grand Slam, but one after another, and then Zverev in the final. And I think he came out with this new feeling for these old new guys. And I think Zverev is the one that got it more to heart. And I think something clicked in his head and he is like, I'm not going to be beaten by this new kid. Why am I not the one doing this? Because he suddenly was playing special tennis again.
Well, in the last UFE episode, which I listened back to just today, I was kind of writing off Zverev and Tsitsipas saying, you know, it's unlikely they're going to be the ones to usurp at the French Open. But I think Zverev was on the way to proving me wrong. I disagree with you in that they'd accepted they weren't going to beat Djokovic and Nadal. I think they really wanted to beat them, but they became very disheartened when they couldn't. There have been some notable exceptions, of course, but I think with the Alcaraz roller coaster, I must admit, maybe I'm just being a cynical old person, but I didn't buy into the excitement as much, and there really was excitement. Everyone seemed to be talking about him. The crowd seemed to be really enthused. He almost got knocked out in the first round, didn't he, by the Spanish chap who looks a bit like a shark, Batista Agut.
But then after that match, he was on fire, wasn't he?
He was. He understandably, I think, felt the pressure. And I do think beating Djokovic and Nadal in that magical tournament, which he won, I think great achievement, but I think it took it out of him. He did pick up an injury there. I think it might have been a bit more significant than he let on. It meant he had to miss the final pre-tournament, a pre-warm-up tournament before the French Open. But yeah, well, your original point about, I think Alcaraz has given a kick up the backside.
To wake up.
Zverev and Tsitsipas didn't work out for Tsitsipas in the French Open.
True.
But yeah, they thought, okay, we can't beat Djokovic and Nadal, but we don't like the idea of someone overtaking us in the pecking order. And fair play to Zverev. Really good. I think he has tightened up a bit. He still does those awful
double faults.
But you see, he was worrying Nadal. And I think Zverev is now emotionally invested in the French Open in that he knew he had the beating of Nadal. He was going to push him all the way. It might have still been Nadal, But yeah, Zverev was going to take him to five sets.
Zverev?
And I think now, and I maybe wouldn't have said this before the tournament. I think Zverev could now win the French Open in the next 1 or 2 years. Mm. He is now connected with the tournament. Mm-hmm. He got a lot of brownie points for coming out and waving goodbye in his wheelchair to the fans. He did seem to cry a bit like a girl when he went down.
Oh, and I was shouting at the TV,
get up, come on.
We got to comment on
nothing
that.
Nothing wrong with you, but I was wrong. There was something wrong
with
him.
Yeah, but I mean, the way he took pain showed a little bit of how he is inside himself, because he was crying like, not like a girl, like a child. He was,
yeah.
I know it was painful, but judge me if you want. But
I think
that cry was a cry to show the world that he was really hurt.
Was it partly a cry to show, oh my God, this is my big chance. I was doing so well. But isn't it weird?
That's a possibility.
The top players don't tend to get injured in these big matches. It's people like Philippoussis against Sampras when he was troubling Sampras at Wimbledon was a setup. He gets injured. Sampras got injured against Curry in the Australian Open. I think he was being sick on court, but he came back to win. It's almost like the top players, the gods, they don't get injured in these matches, these top matches.
It's meant to be, isn't it?
Isn't it strange that? What a strange coincidence that it is. I think, was it last Wimbledon when Federer was in real trouble in the first round? Was that against Mannarino?
Again,
it's
like
not Federer who gets injured. It's Mannarino.
Yeah.
It's just a strange coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're...
Or is it a coincidence?
I think it has something to do with the magic of their drive, how they are strong-minded. Somehow the body responds to that.
Yeah.
Somehow. Whereas we know how... There's a bit of snowflake in Zverev, and I think maybe that's why these things happened to him. I know the injury
maybe
was bad.
Maybe not now, after this, maybe that snowflake will melt away
Hopefully.
A bit more. And he's
it's about
like,
time.
Come on, I can do this. I've almost climbed the mountain once. Maybe next year or the year after, I will again at Roland Garros.
Yes, and he taught a lesson to Alcaraz in that match. Although,
yeah.
I must say that Alcaraz, it was the worst day for him, and he couldn't hit the ball. But this happens. And then Zverev was serving like a god, so he was like,
yeah.
All... But he was fighting against the last point. You see, I like that about Alcaraz.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that's what disappointed me in Ruud in the final. Being against whoever it is, you can't lose 6-love in the last set in a Grand Slam final. No. You have to fight. And I know he was fighting, but there was some defeat after two sets. I mean, who's going to beat Nadal after being two sets down in the final of the French? Nadal has never lost a French final, has he?
He hasn't. I don't think he's gone to a fifth set in the French. Maybe once against Djokovic. He won.
That's a good question.
That might have been the semi-final. Incredible. Well, Félix Auger-Aliassime took him very close in this tournament.
Yes. That was the best challenge. I'm not sure Djokovic gave him the same.
No, yeah, Djokovic.
What do you think of his
keenly
tournament?
Anticipated, but Djokovic just it just was not one of those days. Unfortunately, I thought Djokovic was really peaking at the right time.
Yeah,
and it was going to be a very juicy match. But once Nadal gets his foot injured or otherwise on your throat, he doesn't really let go too often at all.
And speaking of these records, 22
well,
Grand Slams. It's two away
That's
from the other two.
That's why I wouldn't mind Federer winning a couple of extra Wimbledons.
I know.
Because of that other race, the separate race alongside.
Yeah. Can Federer do it? Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I believe in another miracle. In Wimbledon, coming back excited, body good, giving it all, and winning another Wimbledon. But two...
The second coming, the third coming even, really.
After 40, it's tough, man. It's really tough. And especially after all these surgeries that he's been having.
It definitely is. But I miss the old goat, if I can call him goat. What I miss is he's so quick in between points, whereas I hate to bring this up again. I know it probably annoys you, David.
I love that you bring this up.
Nadal, the number of times he bounces the ball...
And
sticks a finger up his jacksie, lines up his bottles. it hasn't improved with the stopwatch, I don't think.
It's worse. Now he uses it the whole time.
Djokovic, again, yeah, it's a long, long time. These are the two most successful. Kilic, God bless him, he had a great tournament. But again,
very good
it's
tournament.
Bounce, 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 boun
not tennis, man.
Rude in the final, I found in the semi-final against Kilic and against Nadal, he was waiting there, and there were times when he was just looking at his box.
I know.
His eyes were wandering. He was bored. I wouldn't be surprised if he got a book out at one stage and started reading it while waiting to receive.
I would be pissed off.
Yeah.
I would lose my cool.
How do they get away with it? How do the rules... We know this is a problem.
Much.
We're trying to make tennis sexier for young people.
Oh,
how is that sexy?
Horrible.
You know, it's like watching fly fishing or something.
Exactly. That's a good one.
It just hasn't changed.
It's horrible. And it's counter excitement, counter sport.
These things don't change the grunting as well. I was watching Murray's match against Kyrgios the other day.
He's
become
noticing.
A grunter. He's become a grunter.
You know what's happening with tennis?
I wasn't before?
It wasn't. Jim, no, you come from even before me. Tell me the truth. Let me put it out there and you tell me what you think. I've been noticing that now everybody's grunting, except a couple. Why is everyone grunting now? It's become a form of playing tennis. It's part of the training, I think.
Well, it improves your timing, doesn't it? Because a lot of these players don't grunt throughout the whole match. It's when they're down and you're reinforcing that timing. And I think grunting does help. I don't know if you tried it yourself. And repetitive behavior can get you into a groove, which can help you in a match.
I understand. For me, repetitive behavior is hitting a tennis shot. You repeat that so many times per rally that that's enough. And you know what? There is this girl called Travis Sun, which got to the semis for the first time.
Yep.
And her grunt goes all the way until the opponent.
That's too much. But you know, there's no law to tackle this, really, is there?
No.
And the opponents must be annoyed. They must be having a word at changeovers. Like
Goff was annoyed.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
Very, very annoying. But yeah, this is the tennis nowadays. Everybody grunts. But
sometimes these grunts sound like a line call, like someone's calling the ball out, which must be very, very tricky for the opponent. And I've come across that too. Sometimes my opponent makes a grunt like he's made a mistake or he's calling it out. Yes.
There's some very odd players in Brighton, okay? Don't get me started.
In the world, I think this is a world.
In the world, yes. I'm talking about where we live, but yes, in the world.
Night matches, late night matches in the cold of Roland Garros. We didn't have them a few years ago. Are you a fan or an enemy?
That was a problem. What's up with having night sessions and day sessions? Get rid of that. Wimbledon doesn't do that, and I respect that. You buy your ticket, you have full day at Wimbledon, full day at the French. The matches in the night always start with little numbers, and you get people constantly coming in the first match. It's fucked up. Second of all, if you're going to do it, then at least start earlier. If some of those matches, especially the semifinals of the men's, if that would have gone five sets, would have ended at 4 or 5 a.m.
Yes,
Barrett, start
Nadal.
Earlier.
Yeah.
And then there's another problem. They only put men's in the night.
Well, yeah,
and they didn't like that. That was a bit weird.
Amélie Mauresmo, the tournament director, she said that's because people at the moment are more interested in men's tennis, and she got into a lot of trouble for that. And she said, the quote was taken out of context, which is what people always say when they get in trouble for a comment. But do you think she had a point there? You know, is that fair enough? If men's tennis is more popular at one stage, you should show more of these prime time night matches.
In my opinion, it has to be one woman's, one man's. And it gives more space, more time. I mean, the woman's match is never going to be five sets.
So alternate it.
Alternate it, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, woman, woman, man. And this is not even about equality. This is just about having a nice show to watch. You want to watch in the night a woman's and a men's.
Well, the great thing about a woman's match as a night match is it's not going to last that long.
It's not going to last so long.
So if you're tired and it's like, the night match is starting at 10 o'clock. Mm. It's a ladies' match. I might as well watch to the end. Whereas if it starts at 10 o'clock and it's a men's match, I would think this could go on for 4 hours. I'm not going to watch any of it because I won't watch to the end. So what's the point?
Yeah, that's it. I think that was bad. Then they have to change. They have to start earlier.
Yeah, it's too late for people to catch the metro home. That's not how it should be. But I love the atmosphere of day matches. And I think you lose some of that in the nighttime. You know, looking at the picture of Roland Garros in the daytime, that's Roland Garros. One of my favourite matches is the day-night match, where it starts in daytime. Someone's on top for, say, two sets. And then the lights go on and it's a different match. The temperature drops. And suddenly the other player starts playing well because it's, and that's great. You've got this story to the match.
Sounds
and changes.
Great.
I don't like an all-night match. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I understand. And it's my favorite time to play tennis and to watch tennis. The night is very special. It's where the human nature becomes more outgoing, extroverted, and more expressive. Let's add the alcohol to it as well. That's why pubs open in the night for people to go out. That's why the night is the place to be naughty, the time to do all those things. But definitely there's something special about the night. But I do like from the day to the night. Clay courts have a story even without day and night.
So tell us more about the watering and how it changes the courts.
I can't even remember anymore what was my message to you. I do remember that the watering depends on the conditions of the day and also on how the clay is looking like after one or two sets. So they will
water. They can change the bounce.
They can change the bounce. It can change the speed of the ball, the way you hit the shot. So the clay court is probably the hardest to adapt over time in a match. Even the grass doesn't change that much in one match.
No, it changes over a tournament, though.
Over a tournament, there's more like that. Yes,
probably
we can
more
see
in
it.
The past, you know, the court gets worn in different places.
But
all these different conditions, we all say, ah, Nadal, this is not the condition for him. It's cold. The balls aren't going to be bouncing as high.
I was going to say that.
He always adapts.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, does this conversation give more credit to 14 slams at the French?
Because
Nadal is adapting to all of it.
Yeah.
Maybe his game style is just designed for it, isn't it?
It is, and especially the French Open, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he does lose sometimes in the build-up to it. They're very big tournaments as well. As I keep on saying, Nadal doesn't lose, he just gets injured. And if you look at the times he's lost in the French Open, there's often an injury there. You know, there's always something going on.
Okay, so now we'll move on to the women's, which is, for me, the most exciting part of this Grand Slam.
You thought the women's was better than the men's?
Definitely ended on a better note for me than the men's. But the reason why I like the women's very much is because there's a great story going on, finally, after all these decades of us talking about tennis in the UFE show, complaining about the women only having one hit wonders and then disappearing. We finally have someone changing history, hopefully. And that girl is called Swiatek.
Emma Raducanu. Oh, sorry. Rewind. But all these years, we've been kind of like saying, hey, you know, come on, there's only one person out there. It's boring. And now we've got someone else out there. But there seems to be no rival. Again, it's perhaps sour grapes from me, but I would have loved to have seen the changing of the guard with the old queen getting deposed by the new queen. I don't blame Igor at all for that. But she's taken over from Serena at the head. Or Ash Barty. Oh. But they haven't really overlapped, have they?
That would have been such a great rivalry now. What a shame that...
Yes, it is.
Barty should have finished this year at least, you know, for us to watch some incredible... Because...
Wouldn't that have been great, a Barty-Swiatek final?
Oh, it would have been so much better. Swiatek literally annihilated everyone. There was only one very interesting... Guys, watch out for this woman. Her name is Zheng, and she's 19. And she took a set out of Swiatek. If I would take a wild guess, the next few years is going to be Swiatek and Zheng fighting for titles.
Your educated guess is they're going to be the rivals, not Swiatek and Gauff.
Gauff needs a bit more pedigree to get somewhere.
She had a great tournament, Gauff. She had some tricky matches, which she came through pretty comfortably.
She's playing well. I'm glad to see it.
She is, but I'd have to say her forehand completely went missing in the final.
Disappeared.
And it happens to all of us. It happens to us lesser mortals. She's a great
player.
Happened
to me a few
But you're being ultra critical, and which Gauff probably was and should be after the final.
Yeah.
She was netting simple forehands. They weren't forced errors. They were unforced errors. And yeah, she must be disappointed. She didn't show
her
capabilities.
Not.
Her forehand is a lot better than that.
And she was playing really well. I mean, we have to again congratulate Gauff, this youngster, finally reaching a slam final.
But I think
I'm
there was a similarity between her and Ruud. And yeah, I think Gauff, even more than Ruud, didn't show her full
didn't
game.
Didn't show. No, they were not there in the final.
And yeah, it was a let-off.
He was. Both finals were disappointing.
They are. I mean, I think, to me, it's nice to have at least one of the finals be close. Doesn't have to go the distance in either of them.
Come on.
And we need that. And often the French finals do seem pretty one-sided in this era. Nadal, you know, it's often straight sets, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And when Świątek won a couple of years back, she annihilated everyone as well along the way. And look at this, like, look at Świątek's quarter, semis and final. 6-3, 6-2, 6-2, 6-1, 6-1, 6-3. I mean, there's no fight in these girls, almost. You know what she's been doing to the players? She's rushing. There's no time for them to think. The tennis is spectacular, Jim.
She's the anti-Nadal.
Have you watched some of her matches? When she's playing, the ball is always on fire. You see a bit of trace of fire in all her shots.
Trail.
It's spectacular to watch. It's proactive, aggressive, powerful, and consistent tennis. It's unbelievable. By the way, there's another player that I wanted to mention. I really like her, Kazatkina. She has a whole different type of game. It's like almost like a cartoonish tennis. Very balloony, but she has hands of gold. She has beautiful technique. She does everything.
And where does she reach?
And she reached the semis where she got wiped out by Świątek.
Yeah.
And if you haven't watched Kazatkina's press conference after losing, go and watch and learn. I'm telling this to any of us. Learn how to speak after you lose. I really like this girl, her personality and her game. So I hope that she starts coming up again. But going back to Świątek, Jim.
Well, what's going to happen? What in a row?
37.
Yeah, what is the golden question?
Where is it going to end?
can someone hypnotize her to think that clay...
Six tournaments in a row.
The grass is clay.
Yes.
You know, can she step off one surface?
Well, she won now 6 tournaments in a row, and it was hard court and clay. So it's not only clay. Hmm.
No, it isn't. But I don't think she's made an impact
different.
On grass yet.
Not yet.
And there's quite a few people who Zarka
True.
Really hasn't
True.
Shown grass court form. It's not looking good for her at the moment.
Not at all. Zarka is like a forgotten story almost, and the boring one, by the way. But don't forget one thing: Świątek has never ever reached the grass season on fire like this.
And she's got no Ash Barty, to have to pass at the net in a Wimbledon semi-final or final. Yeah. So she might have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, there's no one around. So, yeah, let's see.
I have one prediction to ask you. What's going to be the number Świątek is going to lose at? Venus Williams at 35, Serena at 34, Świątek at 36.
She is going to win 41 matches in a row and 41. Lose the 42nd. And that is because 41 is the magic number. Bjorn Borg at Wimbledon won 41 matches in a row. Roger Federer at Wimbledon won 41 matches in a row. So that's how many Świątek's going to win. Which begs the next question.
Wimbledon?
Wimbledon, is she doing a warm-up tournament first?
Or she's going
because
for the Wimbledon.
Because if she isn't doing a warm-up tournament, that means she's not going to reach the Wimbledon final.
Yes.
It means she's going to lose in... the quarterfinals, I believe.
Okay, my guess, and I'm going to be wild here, she's going to go to 100.
She's going to go to 100?
She's going to win everything.
Well, that's a...
Nobody's going to beat her ever. This year, nobody's beating Świątek.
Boxer Rocky Marciano won 49 fights in a row.
Wow.
Larry Holmes won 49 fights in a row.
Amazing.
So that's another number. She could get to maybe 49,
I like that.
But not 50. 50.
Yeah, 50,
not
49.
50.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. So she would win Wimbledon, maybe.
Yeah, I hope so. And any final notes on the women? Anything you want to mention?
Świątek needs a rival. It's not her fault that she hasn't got one. She can't make one.
She can make one.
Quite right. You know, like Nadal, if she can win six love.
Exactly.
Go for it. Conserve your energy. Don't get injured.
Rule change.
Talking about rule change. Talking about
rule. Okay, Jim. We have a rule change from the commentator, one of my favorites. Don't remember his name now. He came up with this rule change. If you want a medical timeout, you have to give up two games. And to explain, there's a lot of players now going for timeouts. A little massage here, a little something there to improve the condition.
Minor operation there.
Surgery. To improve their body. But that's not really fair, is it? Because you go with the body that you have to a match and you deal with it. And if it doesn't work out, your body or your mind or your technique or whatever you have in tennis couldn't beat your opponent. But now you're getting these massages and you're using this medical timeout strategically. Tell me what you think.
Would it count as a medical timeout if they have the medical attention during the normal time span for a changeover, which is what, is it a minute you get for a changeover or 2 minutes?
Yeah, they definitely can get massage. And,
but it
and,
has to be within
bandages,
2 minutes, and then that wouldn't count as a medical timeout.
It wouldn't count, yeah. But I think they have a limited amount of visits.
Ah, so would that be part of the new rule?
Maybe, yeah. Because I don't think they're bringing, they can't bring them.
I mean, if you were allowed medical attention at each changeover without this new rule coming into effect, you'd have to have a doctor available, wouldn't you? And they've got tournament doctors, but they haven't got one for each match.
No,
really, have they?
Definitely not.
I think in principle, it's a really good idea. Yeah, you forfeit a game, and especially two games, because you could go, okay, I'm not breaking this guy's serve. I'll take my chances in the tiebreak and give up one game. So I think two games is better for that. I think the great thing about it is a rule like that would make it more like public court tennis, where you can't just lie down for 10 minutes and phone up a doctor friend to come running from the house. And your opponent will go, yeah, let's wait till you're better if it's a league match. I do think it is strategic and it is being abused. In football, you can't have a massive long timeout there. So, yeah, I think that is rule change approved by me.
And would you change anything in that rule change? Add anything to it? Subtract anything from it?
So you'd only be allowed one medical timeout and forfeit two games. Is that right under the plan?
Two per match. Okay, continue.
Okay, for ladies and men's, because they're a different length of match.
Yeah.
You know, here's another idea to integrate that on the idea of people changing over. So we have so many different changeovers in men's tennis. After one game, they go to the towels. They're not really allowed to. After 3 games, after 5 games, after 7 games, after 9 games, after 11 games, there are all these breaks. So yeah, just have maybe at the end of a set, you have one. And then a player could call for a timeout, not for a medical, for any reason they want, once a set.
Oh, I see. It's like a timeout
so
in
you would
basketball.
Have a maximum of 3 kind of timeouts, changeovers per match.
Wouldn't that then bring back the problem of using that in to change momentum? It would still be the same problem,
wouldn't it?
It would
be strategic, but it would be openly strategic instead of, I'm pretending my ankle hurts. Yeah. So
that makes sense. It's like basketball. Basketball, the coach can do a timeout when the team is running out of control
and
losing
it be
badly.
Interesting, because sometimes someone would make a bad strategic one. You won 4 games in a row and you call a timeout and then you don't have
that
to call a timeout. You can use it or lose it. It's up to you.
That's more out in the open. I approve that modification.
What about each player can call for 1 break per set?
For anything.
If both players use that, they both play that joker card, there'd be 2 breaks every set.
Yeah, I would go for 3 breaks per 5-setter.
For the whole of the 5
sets? For the
sets.
Whole of the... And
per
2
player or for...
Per player.
Okay,
and,
so 6 in a match.
And 2 breaks per best of 3 per player.
Okay, yeah.
Something like that. I think 1 per set is too much.
Well, we don't have breaks when we play in the
Blazer. We never have breaks.
I know we're not professionals and our rallies are probably
We don't
probably
play at
shorter,
that intensity.
But, yeah, the pros if they'd be exhausted, but isn't that a good thing, because you get a different style of tennis? It would be less kind of there'd be times when they kind of have to let shots go and regroup and
exactly
be more strategic.
And what happens to the one that is not injured? He has to pay a price for the player that is actually getting the medical timeout. I really like this rule change, and there it is.
I think we're both agreed that something needs to be
done
about it. And
something.
Obviously, we don't want people to play on with broken legs or anything like that. Would this new rule change, how would it apply to Zverev? It's definite he isn't faking it after the initial cries like a young sheep. So he'd be allowed a kind of 3-minute medical timeout, just the one.
Whatever is the injury, the player is the one that has to choose what means a medical timeout to them.
Could your opponent overrule it and go, look, I know this guy's injured. I'm going to let him have 10 minutes. Could you add that into the rule change?
No, then 1 hour, we're already completely going too far.
Too generous.
We're the generation of creating more snowflakes than warriors these days. So maybe warriors will come back one day. Very interesting. Rule change. Bring it on. What's yours?
My rule change, and I've been opposed to this, but I think I'm now in favor of this rule change, is no warm-up before the tennis match. I'm just getting more and more fed up with warm-ups. I had a match after I got thrashed last week. I had a league match against a very nice guy, Steve Penny. And we did that little warm-up where you stand on the service line and you just pitter-pat the ball back.
No.
And I said, should we stand back now? And he said, oh, thank God you said that. I hate doing it. I said, really? Oh. I said, I hate it too. And this, we both said, why did we do it then? And it's because it's almost become accepted.
Pathetic.
You have to. I think, and again, it's one of McEnroe's ideas, there's times when you haven't got much time, let's just start the match.
You can
warm up in the first few games, and it's exciting. You're going to play a few loose shots. You might play a few great shots.
You might start on fire.
Just start it. At least it's timed in the professional game. It's 3 minutes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But in the amateur game I play, these warm-ups can go on for about 8 or 9 minutes.
Horrible.
Can you give me some forehands?
Oh, man.
Can you give me some backhands? Or can you give me some lobs at 32 degrees north-northwesterly?
Oh.
Come on, it's time to go home and we haven't even started the match.
It's horrible. You know, I love your rule change, one of my favorites until now. Everyone that I play against that asks me to be there in front of the net doing that warm-up, I make them feel bad about it. I put the most boring face. I don't do spin at all. I just bunt the ball back.
Have you ever had a rally in an actual match replicating that warm-up where you're both standing on the service line?
It doesn't exist.
No.
Doesn't exist.
So what is the point?
It's horrible. I hate it.
You might as well both practice tweeners before
the match.
Honestly,
man.
For all the good it would do.
Exactly.
I'll go further than that, David. Mm. I worry I'm going to use up my best shots in the warm-up. So if I play some good shots in the warm-up, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to lose.
And I must admit that you are definitely the warm-upper that I play against that hits most winners in the warm-up.
Well, to defend myself, the whole point of tennis in a match is really you're not playing in
laying
a match
shots
to
your
aim,
opponent.
To aim the ball at your opponent. So a knock-up is getting you into a dangerous habit.
Sure.
Where you're playing the ball nicely to your opponent, setting them up for a big shot.
Yes.
If they want, which they're not allowed to do because it's a knock-up apart from me. So it's a totally...
You're the only player that does that on a constant basis. But I don't mind it because, you know, whenever you do that, I look at you and I go like, Jim, you're ready to play, aren't you? Let's go. But yes, I like your rule change. I support it enough. And you know, today I was playing against a player that just kept serving.
Yeah.
In the warm-up.
Yeah.
He just went 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It was like, why am I even passing the ball back to this guy? It's like, but I'm being nice. I'm passing the ball back. It's like...
I think if you've got to have a warm-up, 4 serves from each side is 4 serves from the juice
side.
Don't
get your arm going.
4 juices, 4 serves from the ad side. So 2 first serves and 2 second serves.
Yeah.
Agassi always used to go for hell for leather in the warm-up too. Again, I should state, page 53 of his book. He would hit pretty full throttled, and I think people took the mick out of him for that.
And also, there are players that sometimes they still want to warm up their serves, but when you're warming up your serves, they're returning your ball so you can go grab it and then pass them the ball so they can continue.
That's me. I do that because I like to practice my return of serve. And I was going to ask you if that annoys you, but now I know.
No. I think it's really boring that this person still has to serve and is making me go chase his balls because he wants to practice against the serve that I have. Grow some balls and wait for the first serve of the fucking match, man. But I'm not telling you off. I'm just saying this because I've never really noticed you doing that much. You tend to do that, Jim, on the last warm-up serves that I have.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. That's a good idea. I don't do
so
that.
So you normally don't do that when you still have to serve.
Yeah.
So I respect that. But there are players that don't do that. They will
still
want the ball
back.
Did you
know that the professionals, they do the toss before the warm-up? So you'd know if you were returning the serves that that was acceptable.
Yeah.
But at our level, we do the toss after the warm-up.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That's a good point as well.
So getting back, just one final point, as Colombo would say.
Please.
In an actual match, you've started the actual match. How do you feel about you serve out and your opponent hits the ball back? Should they pocket the ball, hit it into the net, hit it into a place where it doesn't interfere with your side of the court, or should they return it to you and call out? How do you feel about that?
Oh, I know exactly how I feel about that.
Tell. Share.
Let go of the ball. For example, for me, whenever a player misses the first serve and he's going to serve again, every time I have reached to the ball, I stop the ball and I put it in my pocket. There's no chasing the ball away from the court if it comes back. There's no time wasted. He can concentrate on his little basketballing and then serving the second serve.
So let me get this clear. You don't want the returner to return the ball to you if you've hit your serve out.
It's
I do that as well.
Oh, you do? Lots of players do, Jim. Most players I play against do that.
But you would rather they just caught the ball pocketing.
Why are they giving me the ball back?
I suppose there's an argument that your second serve could be a net cord, so you would need two balls. But then you could always, if you pocketed the ball, just pass it to them then.
Yeah, look, it happens a lot, actually.
Yeah.
But still, this means...
You'd prefer them not to do that.
What this means is... Whenever a ball is coming back from the first missed serve, the first serve missed. What happens is, if the player is passing the ball back at you, he's immediately interrupting you and your moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, why are you passing me the ball? This is my moment. I don't want it. Every once in a while, you do reply to some serve because you're not sure if it's in or out. So you want to make sure that the opponent understands that you are ready to answer.
Sometimes the serve is so close, but it's just out, that you have to commit to the shot just in case. Which looks really dodgy, because if you're going out, you've got to time it right, because otherwise it looks like, return's gone in the net.
Exactly.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yes, I think we got to be tolerant about it. Mm. What
where
about you? You're okay
on,
with it?
Where do you stand on clearing the balls your side? So, okay, you do your serve and it lands in the net your side and it bounces back and trickles back. Have you got a policy on when you would clear your court and when you would just let it go, leave a ball on your side of the court? And
it's normally
do
the service line, isn't it?
Yeah, I have that too. Do you have that? Is that a common thing?
Yeah, if it
comes back over the service line, I would clear my side. But
that's
if it's
what
before,
I do. Yeah. And of course, before the server is going to serve into that pocket again, of course. But let me tell something warm to you, Jim. Even though in the last 10 minutes you discover two things that you do that I don't like, you're on the top three players that least annoy me.
That's really good, because I think I sometimes annoy other players because I do collect balls for my opponents. And actually, that annoys you, doesn't it? When we're changing over ends.
Oh, my God. But you stopped doing it after I asked.
Yes, because you told me.
That was very nice of you.
I would collect the balls and hand them to you like I was a little dog or something, I suppose, or a little ball.
It's very kind. I'm feeling bad about this because I feel guilty because they're being so nice.
Yeah.
But I'm like, please, my moment of concentration before serves is going to grab the ball. That's my moment.
That's your me time, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's your me
you're
time.
Thinking. I'm always collecting balls from my opponents during the game too. If it's my side and they're serving, I will run over, or if it's just their side of the net, I'll reach over.
You're being nice. Yes.
Sometimes it interrupts their flow. It's not deliberate.
It's true.
How about this one? Do you find any players you're serving and they'll collect balls their side? So when it comes for you to serve, you've only got one ball.
That's what I was going to say.
Two
Thank
balls.
You.
And then they'll grudgingly give you the third ball and you think, but you've still got the fourth ball. Can I not have them all?
Just today, every time I was serving, I had two balls.
You're begging for balls.
I'm asking them.
And you need three at least, don't you?
Yes. And I want four. I don't want to be receiving balls from the opponent all the time. You know what I mean?
Being fed.
Every once in a while, it's okay. But I want to have that moment. And today, I was playing and I asked, please, can you give me the four balls? Very kindly. Great, pass the four balls. I did my service game, he did his service game. It's back to me, two balls. And I'm like, didn't he understand that I want four balls?
Yeah.
Please, could you pass me four balls?
Yeah.
And we're on these every service games. Like,
yeah.
Do they do it on purpose?
And it starts to prey on your mind before you, it's your turn for
it
a serve.
It does. Do they do it on purpose?
I found it with a few people.
They
yeah, yeah. But so then I've been accused of it too. It's like, can I have a third ball or a fourth ball? I'm awfully sorry, you know. Yeah, it's good
a
to know.
A distraction every once in a while.
They don't discuss this on Amazon Prime, this kind of
no,
thing, do they?
Don't.
And this is what I think makes, maybe I'm being vain, our podcast a bit different and better.
Definitely.
This isn't a consideration.
Definitely. These things, man, everything is so politically correct these days. It's sad because I tell you, I'm sure the commentators in the 70s or 60s were more outgoing, more daring. They had to be. Nowadays, there's so many lines that you can't cross. And that's a problem with society these days. My rule change is abolish grunting.
Abolish grunting. I mean,
there's not much. I don't even know how to go about it. But
how would you remove a bark from a dog?
Yeah, exactly. It's a problem.
It's not easy.
It isn't. I would just love it. I don't like it. They should maybe come up with... We talked about it once upon a time. But there's some sort of... volume level check
to go with a speed clock.
Yes, and go like, this is too high. You can't be doing that. Sorry.
Do deaf tennis players grunt?
I wonder.
There's a question for Mrs. Google.
Wow. Okay. If somebody knows, let us know. All right. Great. Thank you very much, Jimmy. Was really good conversation.
No, thank you. And I think there's only one way to end this episode.
Yes.